Well, let's now look at geopolitical activities in light of biblical prophecy. We do that with the man in Washington, D.C., who has a vantage point to look at the entire world and help us to understand things that are happening. That's Ken Timmerman. And Ken, let me get started with a recent book that I think it's not even been released yet. It's not on the bookshelves in the bookstores across the world, but Robert Gates, who was the Secretary of Defense for President Bush and President Obama, has written a book, Harsh Criticism of the Obama Leadership. Have you had opportunity to peruse it at all, and what are your thoughts?
It's a pretty extraordinary book from the accounts that we've seen so far in the Washington Post and other news media. Duty, is the name of his memoir, will be released next week, and he recounts primarily his days with both the Bush administration and the Obama administration, but at the Pentagon when he was the Secretary of Defense. And the extraordinary thing about this kiss-and-tell memoir, so to speak, is that he really takes the scales off of Obama and exposes both him and Hillary Clinton for the raw political animals they are. He shows the dysfunction of the Obama White House. He reveals that Obama himself did not believe in the surge in Afghanistan, which he ordered as president, ordering 30,000 additional troops to go to Afghanistan. He didn't believe it would work. He didn't believe it was a good policy, but he knew he was sort of forced into it and went along with it. And, you know, Gates is just telling these stories. You can see his mouth dropping with each new story that he tells of this cynical president, a cynical foreign minister or secretary of state, Hillary Clinton, who acknowledges that she opposed the surge in Iraq, not because it was bad policy, but because it was bad politics. In other words, it was good politics for her to be against the surge. And it just goes on and on and on. You see the total cynicism of the current generation of leaders at the head of this country.
Now, you mentioned a kiss-and-tell book. This is not some radical right-winger who is going after these two people and their political aspirations and their philosophies, but this is a very well-respected man, not only in Washington, but in the academic world as well. Robert Gates is not just trying to lay out something. He wants to let the world know the truth.
And it's all the more astonishing, the tone of his book, because he was such a low-keyed person in public life. And he recounts his growing frustration, even anger, as he was Secretary of Defense under Obama. At one point, he talks about a meeting in the Situation Room with the then-director of the National Security Council, a guy named Tom Donilon, who's a former State Department diplomat. And Donilon, in front of 11 cabinet members, was just ripping to shreds a three-star general who was not in the room. And Gates said he was furious, but kept quiet, because Gates, remember, was his commander. Donilon had nothing to do with the Defense Department. And another point, he says he, when they were getting ready to go into Libya in early 2011, Gates said he felt compelled to deliver a, quote, rant, because the White House staff was talking about military options with the president without the Defense Department being involved. Absolutely extraordinary.
Wow, it certainly is. Could that play in what his entire focus of the book is about? Could it play into the recent survey that said the United States is the greatest threat to world peace?
Certainly, I saw that survey. It's this annual thing done by the Gallup organization, and you never really can figure out who they talk to when they come up with a conclusion like that, if there's a single American that they interview. But look, Robert Gates is an amazing individual. He's surprised once again with his book. Many people, myself included, did not expect this of Robert Gates, to have him drop that public persona of even-handedness, of the genteel servant, the men in power, to show that the inner anger that he had at the amateurness, the amateur hour in the White House under Obama.
Yeah, very, very bad. Talk to me about Iraq. Seems like there's an uptick in violence there. United States trying to speed up their supply of munitions, military equipment into that country.
Well, it's a lot more than just an uptick, unfortunately. We're seeing a wide-scale eruption, not just of sectarian violence, which has been going on for some time between the Sunnis and the Shias, but we're seeing a resurgence of al-Qaeda, And remember, Al-Qaeda was defeated, according to President Obama, in 2011 when he managed to order the Navy SEALs to kill Osama bin Laden. So there's no more Al-Qaeda, and yet Al-Qaeda today now controls, once again, the city of Fallujah in Iraq. This is a city that more than 1,000 American soldiers died to liberate, and it's just gone over, you know, been handed over essentially to Al-Qaeda on a silver platter. They're also into Ramadi, another Sunni city in the Anbar province to the west of Baghdad. So they now control more territory in Iraq than they've ever controlled before, and the central government doesn't know what to do, and we're no longer engaged militarily. So all we can do is send drones and maybe send some additional Humvees or something, perhaps some F-16s, what the Iraqis have been asking for forever. But that's all we can do. We are no longer engaged, and this has even frustrated Prime Minister Maliki and his people. The Iraqi ambassador to Washington last week gave a pretty extraordinary interview where he, as a sitting ambassador on post in Washington, criticized President Obama for his total disengagement from Iraq.
Wow. Wow. Well, he probably needs the criticism. He's earned it by some of his policy decisions. Well, talk to me about Al-Qaeda a little bit more. I mean, you're talking about Iraq. That's your focus there on Al-Qaeda. But it seems to me, I've got a report, they have more property, they control more territory, have greater power in the Middle East than ever before.
Well, that's right. You add to those cities in Iraq, which we just were talking about, you add parts of Aleppo and northern Syria. You add their presence, obviously their ongoing presence in both Pakistan and Afghanistan. And added to that, let's not forget that Al-Qaeda is deeply entrenched in Libya. Not only are they in Benghazi, where they were involved in the attack against the U.S. ambassador, but they're also they control the southern borders of Libya. And they have these very well-developed arms smuggling networks through Libya into Egypt, the Sinai, and into Gaza that have become have gotten the attention of the Israelis, among others, because they're bringing shoulder-fired air defense missiles that can shoot down civilian airliners out from Libya, taking them to the Sinai, to Gaza, and also into Syria. Very dangerous.
Talking about Syria, let's talk about the fact that the ISIS, and explain that what that is, if you will, please, Ken, vows to crush the rest of the rebel groups trying to take down Bashar Assad.
Well, I've got to laugh in a way. I guess it's a bit cynical and it's a bit sad, but here we are in the United States, where we have been for the past couple of years trying to pick and choose which jihadi groups we prefer to murder us and to murder Christians in the Middle East and to threaten Israel. And so now the latest is you've got two jihadi groups that are fighting each other in Syria. They're essentially in an open battle, in open warfare against each other. You've got ISIS, which is the Islamic State of Iraq, and al-Sham, which is Syria. And they are fighting against the al-Qaeda group that's supported by the leader of al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, the al-Nusra Front. And so we're now supposed to believe that the al-Nusra Front are good guys because they're teaming up with a Free Syrian Army that the United States has been supporting under Obama, or wanting to support recently. They've had to pull back the support. And frankly, in my view, we ought to allow the jihadis to kill each other. The world will be a better place, and Syrians will be freer as a result.
Give me 15 seconds, if you will. The situation in Turkey, we talked about the corruption going on there. Is that getting worse or better?
Well, Erdogan, the prime minister, is in the fight of his political life to keep from being kicked out of power over this corruption scandal. It's touching him personally. His son was involved. Sons of his cabinet ministers are involved. And he knows that he's got a very active judiciary that is going after him.
From Washington, D.C. is Ken Timmerman. His vantage point helps him to look around the world, looking at geopolitical activities and giving us insight right here on Prophecy Today. Ken, thank you so very much for this very informative report. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. God bless.